Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
He's a very talented passer. He's got incredible pocket presence. His feet are always alive. He's made some very difficult throws under duress. Did not have a great supporting cast at Cal, but had tremendous production. But this is a gutsy trade by the Philadelphia Eagles, assuming Carson Wentz comes off at number two. No one thought this. Nobody thought this 3-4 months ago. He comes from a very good system. He's had production. He has all the measurables. You fall in love with him when you meet him, but there is some unknown when it comes to Carson Wentz.
I've had two quarterbacks the whole time, and I stuck with it. I don't think there's going to be a third, and if there is, I don't know that it's an existing team sitting at the slot now.
Move up. Yeah.
Move back into the first round to go get one. The biggest difference probably from last time is the offensive tackle Stanley from Notre Dame instead of Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss going three.
You get an idea today. There's no more bluffing. There's no hiding. Today's the day we get a real idea where every team stands on all these issues. There were three trades of top 10 picks already. There are a small pocket of teams that are interested in coming up. I don't know if we are going to get a third quarterback picked in the first round.
You're always trying to prepare for the unexpected because you just know, you don't know how it's going to fall. Look, people throw out all kinds of information. Some of it's true. Some of it's smokescreen. Sometimes, really, when you're sitting there, you have to really be able to think fast on your feet because when the clock is ticking, it's amazing how tense some people can really get.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, 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 the day has finally arrived. The day that championships are won in some places. The day that misery is assured in others. And I think as we sit here live in Toledo, Ohio, stuck dead smack in between Detroit and Cleveland, I think we know which our two franchises, which category they fall into. The day or the night, as it were, another draft coming to make things assuredly miserable for two franchises right here on either side of us. And that's where we begin this afternoon's extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope you're having an outstanding day. And that's not nearly enough applause. Can you guys pick it up a little bit? Come on. Come on, audience. The studio audience is a little quiet. Jim, what do you do? Got them eating over there or something?
No, not now. No, I would do that before the show.
Maybe did have them go out and smoke with you.
Yeah, now, that could be. That I mean, they left without me on that one. So
they're not back in yet. They were outside with you. All right. How'd umpiring, by the way, go yesterday?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Now, were you behind the dish again?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I was behind the dish calling balls and strikes. They won't call themselves.
Have you had to toss anyone yet?
No, I have not. I'm sure that's coming. No, not as bad as you think. Not as bad as you think.
Good.
You're still going to get it from the peanut gallery. That's just the way it is when you're an official in really any of the sports. You got to block that out.
No question about it. Am I wrong? I mean, today is the day that championships are won for franchises that know how to draft. For franchises that have traditionally been just awful at identifying top talent, and I don't mean just with their first overall pick, whether it be, you know, in the eighth spot the way the Browns are or they had the two spot, but just, you know, throughout the draft, obviously, the teams that are championship teams find that value in the fourth rounder. They find an Antonio Brown in the fourth round the way the Steelers did. You know, undrafted free agents going on and being signed and suddenly rising up to be Pro Bowl-type players. The Browns have had an abysmal draft record, so I also included, in addition to this being the day that championships are made, today is the day failure and misery are assured, just depending on who you've got making the call. And I think the Browns and the Lions are two very, very glaring examples in the second, in the latter camp.
Yeah, and one more glaring than the other. I mean, we are to a degree past the Matt Millen days of drafting all wide receivers for the Lions, and as a result, their drafts have been a little bit better, certainly better than the Browns. The Browns are the anti-gold standard, let's call it that, for drafting horribly, as we know. But, you know, you're right. It's one of the weird sports sweet sciences, if you will, trying to get some of these draft picks, you know, correct, no matter what round you're in. And some organizations are just playing better at it than others.
Yeah, and some have better scouting departments, yep. some have better front offices, but most importantly to me is some have continuity.
Yes.
Continuity in those departments, not constantly changing, so that, you know, Phil Savage's vision on how to build a roster is a lot different than Joe Banner's was. Joe Banner's vision on how to build a roster is very different than what, Ray Farmer's was. And you go back and forth and on down the line with the Browns anyway. They continue to change management teams over and over and over again, front offices, if you will. And you know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. The guys that are on their way out, you know, we're doing one thing that is completely different than what the guys are on the way in are doing. And so it's in a constant rebuild. It's in a constant, you know, refocus, new philosophy type of mode. And that's what's, I think, killed this team through the years. And today, or starting today and over the next 3 days. By the way, does anybody like this?
I'm still getting used to it. I mean, I'm honestly still getting used to it. I, you know, you and I, Bob, we grew up in the days where round one, high noon on Saturday, and by the time you're heading to bed on Sunday night was the completion of the seventh round. I had gotten so used to that. And then, of course, they changed a couple years ago where you get round one on a Thursday, two and three on the Friday night, and then four through seven, you know, on Saturday. I admit I'm still getting, you know, a little bit used to it. They clearly wanted the prime time kind of TV slot in the evening on a weeknight for this. I'd still prefer the old school Saturday high noon start. There was just something different about that, just something nicer about that.
I just like draft day being draft day.
Day.
The day. One day. Not 2 days, not 3 days, not stretching it out. What's next?
And I know they like to be fair, in the old way, they did have to stretch it out in 2 days just because of the number of rounds.
Yeah, well, back when they had 12 rounds, especially.
Right, obviously. Yeah. We forget that it wasn't all that long ago. There were still 12 rounds right in the draft. Good call.
Right, and I don't know exactly what year it was they cut it to seven rounds, but either way, the point is, they just really try to drag it out, and they try for the purposes of drama, which means ratings, which means more revenue, and that's all it is. That's the entire focus of this thing. They've even cut down, as we know, the time in between the picks in the first round, so that the first round doesn't take 6 hours. So they cut down on the time. They could very well do the first two, three, four rounds, probably three, I guess, in one day and then wrap it up in the second day. But anyway, it is where it is, and this is the day or the period where teams either build their championship rosters or they find themselves assuring themselves of more misery. And quite frankly, it's not a big leap. And I agree with you when you say one has been worse than the other in recent years. But historically, over the last 10 or more, there's a reason why neither one of those teams has sniffed a Super Bowl. Neither the Browns nor the Lions have sniffed a Super Bowl because of these types of mistakes on days like this. Which brings me to the point.
And before he gets to that point, I just looked it up, you know, just for posterity's sake, 94 was the first draft that they cut it down to the current set.
So it's been 22 years now.
It's been 22 years now.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize it was that many, to be quite honest with you, because I remember, it's just, I guess, showing my age, but I remember the 12-round drafts. So, you know, it certainly does, you know, put it into perspective. But anyway, Jim, I want to get people in right away as far as what your expectations are, by the way, for the Lions with their pick, with their first pick, and what you want to see them address in this draft overall.
And that's number 16, by the way.
With the first pick. It doesn't have to be with your first pick, because I don't even know exactly when the Browns, for example, are going to make their first pick. I am kind of the belief that they're going to trade that pick again. They went from 2 to 8. And I just don't have a great deal of confidence, and I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I don't have a great deal of confidence they're going to pick a player at number 8. I think they're going to move back, because this is about building your roster, not just filling one hole.
Quarterback.
If you had just one hole and you were just a pick or two away from being a contender, you wouldn't be drafting at the top of the draft. You know, you wouldn't be in that position as it is. So, you know, you look at where the Browns are, and they're sitting now at number 8 because of that trade. And then you look at where the Lions are sitting at 16, and you say to yourself, what can they do with those picks to maximize a roster build? And that's what the Browns did. Now, I have kind of waffled a little bit on theirs on the deal to go from 2 to 8, because in addition to having a million holes where they need a roster build, they need a franchise quarterback. The Lions don't share that need. The Lions have Matthew Stafford, and Matthew Stafford is indeed, I don't want to call him a first-tier quarterback, but he's a quarterback you can win with. He's a franchise guy. The Browns have that need, and they have the huge roster build need. So, to me, I've kind of gone back and forth on whether or not it was a good thing. But as it sits, depending on what they do with it, being an 8 and adding, being at 8, I beg your pardon, being at 8 and then adding the picks that they got from the Eagles, 2 more this year and then 1 next year and 1 the following year, certainly a good move from that, from the roster build standpoint.
Yeah.
The Lions don't have that flexibility. They don't have as many picks, obviously. But they also don't have quite as many holes. And that's why we're going to talk to experts with both franchises. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk to Justin Rogers, MLive.com. He is a Lions beat writer. We're going to talk to him about all of the gaps in the Lions roster, where the biggest needs are, and the best potential players to fit that, not just at 16, but again, looking forward to kind of identifying, if not names of players, positions that will be addressed at which stage of the draft. And then at 4:05, we're going to talk to Scott Petrak out in Cleveland, covers the Browns, and he'll do the same thing for us from that standpoint. So Justin Rogers on the Lions, Scott Petrak on the Browns on our complete draft coverage today right here on the Extravaganza. And then, Jim, we got the draft tonight, right?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. We'll have the draft coverage here on the Ticket, courtesy, of course, of ESPN Radio. 7 o'clock for tonight, 6:30 for your rounds 2 and 3 tomorrow. And real quick, there is one kind of symmetry thing that I kind of like in terms of day 2 and day 3, at least as far as the Browns.
Okay.
Day 2, they will have the first pick of the entire day because they have that very first pick in round 2.
Which essentially is a first-round pick because it's number,
yes,
32.
Exactly.
There's only 31 team, you know, there are only 31 players who are going to be taken,
right,
in the first round because the NFL stripped the Patriots of their first-round pick.
Right.
So the Browns having the first pick of the second round is essentially having the last pick of the first round.
And then on day
number 32.
Right, and then on day 3 on Saturday, when the fourth round restarts, the first team on the clock for Saturday will be the Browns because that 99th pick is the first pick in round 4.
All right.
So I just find we'll get an idea, you know, what they do tonight. But day 2 and 3, we'll get an idea what they're thinking right away since they have the literal first pick of each day.
Yeah, and obviously they've got a boatload of picks. You know, they've got of the top 100, and we've been through this before, they have 6 of the top 100 picks as they stand now.
Yes.
They have the 8th pick, the 32nd pick, the 65th pick, the 77th pick, the 99th, and the 100th. So, you
and
know,
then
they
throw in the 138th for the end of the fourth round, too.
Right. But, yeah, but I'm just trying to keep it in that, you know, that top 100 realm.
Right. 6 in the top 100, 7 in the top 4 rounds, and 12 right. overall.
And that's if they don't move back from 8
Correct.
To, say, 13.
That's
which
as it stands right now. Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to the conversation with Petrak about that today, Jim, because Scott made his pick today. Online, you can see it, and in fact, we should tweet it out. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. Sports Radio 106.5 is the handle. We'll tweet this out there. But Petrak did his mock draft today, and he says the Browns are indeed going to trade back to number 13 with the Miami Dolphins, who are going to be desperate to get up there and get Ezekiel Elliott at number 8. And then with that number 13 overall pick, the Browns get from Miami that they are probably going to take a wideout, Laquon Treadwell from Mississippi, the top wideout on most boards. And then they will, of course, add a couple more picks from Miami. So, you know, what did we say? 6 out of the top 100,
yep,
and then 7 out of the top
4 rounds.
The first 4 rounds. That may increase. Those numbers may
yeah.
increase as they try to restock that roster, which has been just depleted by free agency departures and quite frankly, releases, cuts that the Browns have made.
Meanwhile, just to throw it out there for factual purposes, Lions have a total of 9 picks in this draft, total 2 in round 3, 2 in round 6, and their first and only pick today will be number 16, right? Smack in the middle
16,
of that first
yes.
round.
16, 46, and 95, so they have 3 of the top 100.
Right.
Then they have 111, 151, and now we're into the 5th and 6th and 7th
right.
round, so I won't go through these specific numbers. But here's the thing. as I pump up all of that, and I pump up the draft coverage tonight on ESPN, and you listen to all of the experts on ESPN Radio.
You heard from some of them in the montage just now.
Right on. You know, John Gruden and who else was in that mess?
We had Adam Schefter, Todd McShay, yeah. Louis Riddick.
So, you know, as we do all of this and pump it up and promote it and get all excited and everything else, I would be lying if I didn't say that there's an element of this every year that I really, really don't like. And that element is the instantaneous grading of the draft picks by those media, many of them ones you just named from ESPN.
All right.
Every writer, every blogger, everybody who's ever watched a game and tried to put pen to paper or tap a keyboard is going to give it a grade. And they're going to give it a grade based on need filled and what they project that player to do. But the problem is, as we all know, there is no way to project what that player will do. There is no way to say this is an A-plus pick until 3 years down the road and we find out if the guy's even still in the NFL. The Browns got an A, 4 years ago, is it now, for drafting Trent Richardson first overall. They needed a big bruising running back in the middle of that offense to pound away at the core of the defenses in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Baltimore. You got to be able to run the football in the AFC North to be able to get to have any kind of offensive rhythm. And boy, what a great pick, Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson is now with his fourth team, and he's just hoping to make the team. Obviously, he signed here in the offseason with the Ravens. Think about what that means for a moment. He went from Browns to Colts to Raiders, now with the Ravens, and I don't think he's got 300 yards in the league. All right, he might, but you get the point. So this is the one thing that while we get all excited about this, and I will ask Justin Rogers at 3:35, and you will, Jim, about who he likes in this draft. What does his board say as far as the top player available for the Lions? What about the top need for the Lions? And we'll do the same thing with Petrak on the Browns. And we'll take calls from people about all these things. But at the end of the day, this is more of a crapshoot. This is more of a dartboard than filling out the NCAA tournament bracket is. You know, we made fun of the fact, well, my bracket's busted because we have no idea which teams are going to win which games, which ones are going to be the Cinderellas, which ones are going to be the upset specials and everything else.
And how earlier is everybody going to lose a blatant Final Four team?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, this is the only difference with this is we don't find out as quickly how badly we did because we don't know how bad some of these players are, again, until 3 years down the road,
sure.
Probably. So that's the one thing about this. I am very hesitant to put all of my credibility on the line and say, this is what the Lions must do. This is what the Browns must, what position they must take, what player they must take. They got to take the best corner available. They got to take the best pass rusher, blah, blah, blah. And this is the solution because, quite frankly, that best pass rusher, even though that might be, in theory, the right decision, might end up sucking. Because they're look at Barkevious Mingo, the number 6 pick overall 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Big pass rusher, going to provide that edge speed they've been looking for.
Yeah.
Can't stay on the field. Why? Too small. He can get handled by the big offensive tackles. And on pass coverage, he's too slow, quite frankly. So he's kind of one of those tweener guys. He's just not big enough to handle the run straight at him and to get past some of the big tackles. And so anyway,
you get the other angle, Bob, where do you take the approach of best available when it's your turn, position need, and a perfect example of this. I've been hearing a lot of people related to the Browns pointing out that, you know, if he falls there, it would seem to a fan like, oh, if he falls there, you got to take Joey Bosa of the Buckeyes. But the Browns don't really play the kind of system that he would need to be in. That would be more of a drafting highest on the board as opposed to position need. So it's also a matter of what philosophy you're going to take at that point. And for the Browns, I hope they go best player available because, as we know, their need list is pretty much every position.
It really is. About the only place where they could consider themselves less than terrible in terms of roster and depth is defensive line. Which is interesting because you said Bosa, but Bosa's not going to be there at 8, I don't believe. But anyway, defensive line is about the only strength they have. They are horrifically in need in the secondary.
Yep.
after losing both starting safeties and a corner, and Joe Hayden is injured. Oh, by the way, and the other corner, by the way, the one you drafted first in number 8 overall 2 years ago, yeah, that's Justin Gilbert. He's awful. He can't cover me. Anyway, look at the linebacking court. They lose Dansby and Robertson. Kruger was pretty much a non-factor last year. Mingo, we've talked about. They are huge hole when it comes to linebackers. You look at the offensive side of the ball. The receiving core is one of the worst in the league, period. You look at the offensive line. Just lost two starters, two of the top three starters on the Browns' offensive line. And this was an offensive line that gave up 53 sacks with them. Imagine what it will look like without them, unless they're able to fill those gaps in this draft. The running back position, your best player is Duke Johnson, and he was a part-time player last year, largely due to injury. We all know about the quarterback position. Robert Griffin III is going to try to reclaim his place in the league, so to speak, and resurrect his career. Josh McCown is just a journeyman after that, and obviously they're going to draft a quarterback at some point this draft as well. So the needs are huge and glaring, and they have six of the top 100 picks. They could have 12 of the top 100 picks, and still not fill enough of the voids or the holes that they have, Jim. And we're going to get all excited about, all right, they got a corner, they got a this, they got a that, and they got the other thing. And hey, great job, Sashi Brown Paul D. Podesta, great job, good work. But guess what? We don't know if any of those guys can actually play until we get to 2 or 3 years, probably into their careers. And looking at the guys that they've drafted for, not Sashi particularly, but that the Browns as a group have drafted in recent years shows they don't know how to make these picks. And so I have I'm always excited on draft day, but I'm always a little bit, let's not go overboard, with our excitement and our enthusiasm tonight and tomorrow. And no better example of that, by the way, exists than the top of the draft. Because I submit to you that the two quarterbacks, both of whom are going to have been traded for to get them, with the Rams giving the Titans their entire future to get up there to be able to take probably Jared Goff, and then the Browns, getting a ton of picks from the Eagles, so the Eagles could go up there and get Carson Wentz.
And it's at this point that I remind everybody that that's only the fourth time ever in draft history that one and two have been traded away.
Fifth, I thought you said.
No, it was this year, 97, 75, and 67.
Okay, there you go. At any rate, those two guys, I would submit to you, are probably late-round draft picks a year ago. What I mean by that is they're just the two best available in this draft. That doesn't make them franchise quarterbacks. If they were in last year's draft, do you think they'd be being picked over Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota? Forget about it. A couple of years ago, do you think they would have been taken first and second with Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin there? Forget about it. These two guys are being pumped up and projected as franchise quarterbacks simply because they're quarterbacks. And two teams have traded up to get them because quarterbacks are at such a premium.
And there's extra asterisk about those
busts.
Two teams that made those trades up, too. L.A. wants to make a splash since they're back. The Rams are back in L.A., get a face of the franchise. And the Eagles, in and out post-Chip Kelly era, are clearly desperate for some kind of new quarterback, so much so that, if you recall the other day, Bradford said he's not going to show up.
Well, but he just signed a 2-year, $35 million contract, too, so how desperate, really should they be? That's the weird thing about this with them. But the point being, in another draft, where are these guys really in terms of their ability and in terms of their marketability? They're probably late first-round guys, maybe early second-round guys, but now they're both going to be expected to be franchise quarterbacks, and they don't have. So anyway, I get excited about the draft, but I'm very, very hesitant about it as well. Let me squeeze a call in here at the bottom of the hour before we go to the break and then talk to Justin Rogers after that to talk about the Lions' needs, the potential picks, and where they go throughout this draft, not just with number 16 overall. But Steve in Toledo is up. Steve, go ahead. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good, buddy. What's on your mind?
I love the draft. I've been watching it since I was a kid. And this draft has an interesting scenario, and one is you look at the Eagles and look at Cleveland, and they're doing two separate things. And I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinion on which one would you prefer. It looks like Cleveland has decided that, you know, we're going to trade back, we're going to try to accumulate as much talent as possibly can, and then look for our franchise quarterback. Or the Eagles have just said, yes, we're rebuilding, but now we're going to take our quarterback for the future and trade up and then subsequently add talent around. And I was wondering, what do you guys feel is the best way if you're going to build your team?
Well, to me, that really, really, truly depends on the quality of that quarterback that's available. To me, if you have the chance to get a true franchise quarterback, not just a guy that's going to be called a franchise quarterback or who will be paid like a franchise quarterback because he's being picked at the top of the draft like a franchise quarterback, a guy that just fits those descriptions but isn't worth it, I would say you do what the Browns did. And I think that's what they did here. I think they said, well, we got Robert Griffin, and we can see what's going on there. I don't value Wentz or Goff as high as some teams do. I might be better off with a Paxton Lynch or a Connor Cook later on in the first round or at the top of the second round or whatever. Let's get more picks and build the roster. So for this particular draft, my answer would probably be that way, the Browns way, if you truly don't value one of those two guys as a real franchise quarterback at the top. However, if this was another year and there was Luck there or Mariota there or somebody else that was more of a lock, and I don't think anybody would call Wentz or Goff locks, then I would say, no, do it the Philadelphia way. Trade whatever great picks you have to do, get up there to get number one and get the franchise quarterback because they're just that hard to find. That's how I would do it.
Well, thank you for the time. I'm looking forward to the draft tonight, and you guys have a great day.
You do the same, Steve. Thank you. It's a great question. Whose philosophy is better, he asked? Philadelphia's, in which they trade all of those picks to get up and get that quarterback, or the Browns saying, let's hold off, we'll build our roster first and find our quarterback later? And the answer to me, which one is right, is it depends on when the quarterback is available. If it's the right guy right now, then you do it and you get him. If he's not the right guy, but he's a maybe guy, he might be a franchiser. He might be the stud we've been looking for. Let's trade a whole bunch of draft picks to get the maybe guy? Nah. I think the Eagles are doing the wrong thing here, to be honest with you. All right, 3:34. Let's get a timeout. I want to hear a bottom-of-the-hour Sports Center from Jim Cushlin, and then coming up after that, we'll dive more in-depth into what the Lions need when they get on the clock tonight at number 16 and really try to look beyond that and see what needs they need to fill and address throughout the rest of this draft. Justin Rogers, MLive.com, will be right here with us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, back on it, are we, on ESPN 106.5, the ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader, bringing you all things Detroit and Cleveland today from the Lions and the Browns' perspectives, particularly as it pertains to the draft tonight. My goodness gracious. It is a day, as I said at the top of the show, where championships can be built or misery can be assured for another year or two to come. The Browns have the 8th overall selection. I don't think they'll keep it. I think they'll move back. The Lions have the 16th overall selection. I do think they'll keep it. The question is what are they going to do with it? Will they try to replace Calvin Johnson and find a number one receiver, even though they did sign someone who's, I wouldn't call him a two receiver necessarily, but not a one either. How are they going to address that position, or are they going to look into other needs? Joining us now to break it down from the inside is a Lions beat writer, and he's been a frequent guest of the show, and that's certainly our pleasure to have him, Justin Rogers, MLive.com, joining us right here on the Extravaganza. Hey, Justin, how are you, man?
I think I got a gold card.
You got a gold card?
I'm so regularly that I've been upgraded.
Gotcha. You hear you mean. Yes, yes. I thought I was talking draft-wise here for a moment. Yes, you know, you're right. I think you have. You have pretty much all access here whenever you want it because you've been such a good guest to us, and we certainly appreciate your analysis. Do you like the draft? Is this something that you enjoy as a beat guy, trying to figure out what they're going to do and forecasting it, and then once they make the pick, trying to forecast what that pick is going to do?
I like it for a short period of time, and then I get really sick of it. It's kind of like Christmas music on the radio. Like, I'm in for like a week, and then I'm done. It's just such a draining process, and you can only speculate so much in so many different ways, and then it, it just, you feel like you're in an echo chamber with yourself.
That's the word, the speculate part. I was trying to talk about this in the last segment with Cushlin here, about the draft for me. As much as I enjoy it, I realize and recognize literally from the first guy, from Jared Goff probably, that it's speculation as to how good he's actually going to be. I can't sit here and grade, you know, the Rams after that pick or grade the Eagles on Carson Wentz because, I mean, look at all of the first-round quarterbacks who have been bust. Look at all the first-round players, period, who have been bust. And we're speculating that these guys are going to translate their games to the NFL and help these teams that we're talking about. We don't know for sure, and that's very frustrating.
Yeah, and I'd almost rather speculate about it after the fact. You know, I don't like doing the grading. I'm really big into the whole 3 years to evaluate a draft class. But what I don't like is how many different guys are speculated to a given team over the course of the process. Yeah, I don't know how it is with the Browns at that eighth spot, but with the Lions today, I rounded up, as I do every year, all the mock drafts around the countries, try to find, you know, all the different beat writers for all the different teams and all the national experts. 92 mock drafts, which is a new record, showing you that it just continues to get bigger and bigger. 20 different players mocked to the Lions at 16. But just think about that. It's outlandish to think that there's 20 possibilities there at 16. You know, the list is probably much closer to 4 or 5, but because there is a new general manager, the speculation is even more wild because you don't have a feel for what he's going to do. This is his first go-round, and that's been a pretty tight facility with information leaking out of it. So, you know, that's what we're left to do is just guesswork based on the logic that we have available to us.
It's a great point that you just made, by the way, and there are so many mock drafts now, you're right. And what makes one of them more involved and more knowledgeable than another or more inside, if you will? Or is this just somebody like you and me sitting around watching it and looking at the holes, you know, at the various teams and speculating ourselves? We could make 93 and 94 if you and I just go ahead and throw ours up there. And that is exactly right. It is a crapshoot. It is far too many names that are being thrown at it. And so you kind of have to say to yourself, what do we know? We don't know exactly how the general manager for a team like Mr. Quinn, how he feels and what his philosophy is yet. So we can just look and say, what has he done in the past? And obviously he hasn't been a GM in the past, but what has he done in the past and what has this franchise identified even in postseason press conferences as their biggest needs and their biggest holes and their biggest roster gaps, if you will, going forward? You take all of that and at the end of it all, you can put a calculation together, Justin, and it's still, for all intents and purposes, an educated guess.
Yeah, listen, I don't think there's a lot that could surprise me in the way that the 16th pick rolls out today. They could trade up, they could trade down. None of it would surprise me. But given what I know with the needs on the team, and that is defensive end, defensive tackle, and right tackle are the three biggest, and looking at the New England Patriots draft history, especially in the last 5 years as Quinn has had a bigger role with that franchise and they've continued to evolve under Belichick, I highly suspect that they would draft a trench player today. You know, whether that is Jack Conklin if he drops or Taylor Decker from Ohio State to fill that right tackle need, whether that's a guy that's gained a lot of momentum recently is Ryan Kelly, the center out of Alabama, completely on the table. And then the defensive tackle situation. Yeah, Lions got a lot under contract, but guess what? All those guys under contract for 1 year, and they've been very unstable at that position since Sue left town. So, yeah, they could draft one of the top defensive tackles in this class, a guy like Sheldon Rankins or Jaron Reed, who isn't necessarily a schematic fit, but who's to say they're not tweaking their scheme as well. So it's going to be a really compelling evening. I think the next 2 days are going to be very compelling evenings for the Lions organization. Maybe not as much as the Browns, who are completely revamping everything, but still a lot of interest all around.
In terms of some of those needs, Justin, which one do you think that they'll end up going after first, or is that going to be based on what their board looks like, what's gone before them? Or is one of those positions something that they're looking at and saying, yes, we want to get this position first? How do you see them going about those needs?
No, I think they're going to let the board play it out. You know, I think what you do is you have your board drawn up based on needs are a factor. You know, that's part of putting a board together. And you let it come to you. And if you have a prospect that's rated significantly better than a certain group prospect, that's when you try to trade up. And if you got a bunch of guys all ranked the same, you know, that's a good area where you try to trade down. At the end of the day, they really need to address right tackle more than anything. I don't think that they'll force it into that pick one, but if they don't address it in the first 2 days, that would be shocked.
We're talking to Justin Rogers, MLive.com, Lions beat writer. Let's talk about Bob Quinn. Has he given, since he took the job, any indication when he talks to media like yourself and reporters and people who cover the team closely, any indication as to his philosophy, you know, as far as which side of the ball championships are won on? You know, you can identify, as you said, you know, defensive end, defensive tackle, and kind of pick the spots that are the most glaring needs. Has he given indication that that's how he sees things as well? Some guys talk about building from the middle out, you know, looking at centers and quarterbacks and nose tackles, middle linebackers and free safeties, and that's that kind of thing. Has he given any indication as to, like, how he likes to build? Or should we just go back and watch the Patriots, where he came from, and say that's how he likes to build?
I think you're definitely going to get more watching the Patriots than getting something from a Patriots executive's words. I think we all know that they just don't say a whole lot. But the two things that he has said, one is there's a big emphasis on depth. You know, I think we saw that in free agency with the way they went about that. They didn't sign a lot of star players or even starters. They just signed a ton of depth guys. I think I counted up the other day. They had 25 signings in free agency. And that was bringing back some of their own guys. Of course, some of that was exclusive rights free agents. But they signed something like 10 or 12 guys that weren't on the roster last year already. A lot of those guys, most of them aren't projected as starters. And then the other thing Quinn said that, you know, Mayhew would never say, he would always say, Mayhew would always say best player available. And Quinn said that's not the way it's going to be for us. Need is going to be a factor. I've always believed that need always factored into the best player available equation anyway, but to acknowledge that you're willing to reach, even if it's slightly, three or four draft slots, to plug a need as opposed to, you know, going out and, as we mentioned earlier, drafting another wide receiver and overloading a position group, then, you know, that's I think, a logical approach to building a franchise.
So when you look at the first team that you're, I'm sorry, the first position, Justin, that you identified as defensive end as being the biggest need, let's assume that that's something they consider as well. Why no talk about going up to get the best defensive end? Why no talk about going up there to get Bosa or talk about getting DeForest Buckner or talk about getting Shaq Lawson or something? Are they just going to wait until we see the best defensive end, perhaps, kind of combining that best player with need thing that you talked about at their spot? Because I haven't really heard much at all about them going up to get somebody that they consider special.
Yeah, they haven't ruled out trading up. And, you know, Quinn said as much at his press conference that trading up and trading down are both on the table. You know, Bosa, if you believe what the mock drafts are saying in terms of trends, then, you know, Bosa's probably dropping a little. And I think if he does drop into that 8 to 10 range, that 10's probably no chance. But, you know, 7, 8, if he drops there, then I think you make the phone call. You know, it's going to cost you your second-round pick to move up that far. And you have enough needs that I don't know if you really want to give up your top two picks when you only have two in the top 94 as it is. But he is that type of talent that, you know, maybe you do make that call. Same with Laremy Tunsil, the offensive tackle from Ole Miss. You know, those are two guys, if they drop in that 7-8 range, I think they're worth giving up your first and second rounder to move up and go get them.
Kushal, let me ask you this as we kind of look at this from a Cleveland/Detroit perspective. You know, you just heard Justin say that if Bosa, for example, dropped down to the 7th or 8th slot, if he's still sitting there at 8 and Detroit rings your bell and saying, hey, we want it, we'll give you the 16 and something else, would you go back to 16?
I would certainly think about it. I mean, as I've said, Bob, ever since RG3 came over, then shortly after that, the Rams and Titans made their deal. I know we've had this discussion before about how the Browns screw up drafts, but ever since those two things happened, I've been in the ballpark of just go get as many picks as you can.
See, and I guess, and Justin, you can kind of address this too. I, you know, and not that you care much about what the Browns do, but I just brought it up since the Bosa thing happened. You talk about Quinn, and you talk about his experience, excuse me, with the Patriots coming up in their scouting department, and he worked up to director of pro scouting. This is a guy who knows how to evaluate players, and he knows about you know, acquisition, and he knows about value when it comes to draft slotting and that sort of thing, because it's what he's done for his career. Compare that, you got to feel much better about that, I guess, from your standpoint, Justin, covering the Lions, than the Browns have got a guy who's never, ever been a part of a player personnel department. He's never been a part of pro scouting. He's never been an assistant GM. He's been a lawyer. He's been on the business end in his entire dealings with the Cleveland Browns, and that guy's going to have final say over their draft there. So from that standpoint, my goodness gracious, you know, the Lions fans have to feel good about at least who, you know, Bob Quinn is. And obviously the fact that he came from, you know, arguably the most successful program in the National Football League, the franchise in the Football League, in the National Football League and the Patriots gives you pretty good indication that the right guy is calling these shots.
It's probably an analogy to be made there about Donald Trump running for president and who's running the Cleveland Browns in terms of experience in their field. But
very true. No, I mean, very well done, sir. Yes.
Yeah, no.
That deserved more than the requisite golf clap there. That deserved full-throated applause, yes.
I think that's the first time I got a sound drop. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
moving up in
it.
The world. But
you earned it.
No. I think you do feel better about it if you're the Lions. Look at you. You brought in somebody from the best organization of sports. He's considered a wonder kid. He's got nothing but glowing reviews. And, listen, that's partially common, you know, with just, I guess, the rose-colored glasses that are on during this time of year with new hires and stuff like that. But, if I'm the Browns, I'm looking to move down and pick up as many picks. I love the trade they made already. You know, if they didn't believe in Carson Wentz, and that's what I said last time we talked, if they didn't believe Carson Wentz was the guy, then trade down and pick up picks. And they did very well for themselves. If they move down again and pick up another second rounder out of that and drop to 16, I think you could still get a very good talent. Browns have so many needs. I mean, so many needs. So they could pick up, you know, a player there. Now you have three picks in the top 50, have a couple draft picks next year really high. That's the way you rebuild an organization quickly, is you just stockpile those first and second round picks, and then you got to hit them. I mean, that's the key. You're not going to hit all of them, but you got to hit on a good rate of those first and second round picks because they're going to be the foundation of your franchise.
No question about it. We're talking to Justin Rogers, MLive.com, covering the Lions. All right, so who's the best player in this draft? Who's the highest player on your board?
Ooh, I probably would say Buckner. It's really close to the top. I mean, Buckner, Ramsey, Tunsil, Bosa, you know, that group right there is outstanding. You know, I think the quarterbacks are the next step down, and it's not a big step, but, you know, I look at those three defensive players, then Tunsil. If Tunsil was a guy that was healthy, you know, didn't have durability issues at all, didn't have a little bit of character red flags or pink flags, as Bob Quinn likes to call them, then, I think he might even be alone in a class of his own at the top of that group.
When looking at some of these other guys as well, and you mentioned from a Lions perspective, Justin, that, you know, they would probably go more towards needs, and some of those needs are on both sides of the offensive defensive line, things like that. Two things jump out at me in terms of playmakers. On the one hand, we know where this team is in terms of its wide receiving core. It's Golden Tate, it's Marvin Jones, and it's really a bunch of other guys in this now post-Calvin Johnson era. We're obviously not in the Matt Millen era where they're always drafting wide receivers, but I look at that group and think, come the later mid-rounds, either tomorrow or especially Saturday, that might be a position to look into. And one thing that jumped out at me, Bob Quinn has basically already stated that it's quote-unquote good football business to pick up, even if it's a low round, to pick up a quarterback every other year. Now, we're not suggesting he's going to go get somebody to replace Matthew Stafford, but somebody in a backup slot to replace maybe a Dan Orlovsky or somebody like that, because right now Stafford or Orlovsky, for what it's worth, the only QBs on the Lions roster. When, if at all, do you see them addressing those kind of moves? Would that be a Saturday kind of thing, rounds 4 through 7?
Yeah, I think round 4 is where you first start looking at it, and there's some names out there that I think are really nice fits. Kevin Hogan's been mentioned a lot. People really like him because the intelligence factor. I mean, he's coming from Stanford. It's a great program. It's a great school more than anything. And then I really like Jeff Driscoll. I know he had some problems at Florida and was kind of forced out of there. Went to Louisiana Tech and really resurrected his career. What I really like about him is he brings a mobile element to his game that the Lions don't have, and I like that when you have a backup that's different than your starter to some degree. Bring something extra to the table. So if you get in that situation where your starting quarterback goes down, well, at least you're throwing a curveball at the opponent. You know, and Driscoll ran, I think, a 4.56 40, which is ridiculous for a quarterback. He's not the most polished passer. He's not the most accurate passer, but he can be developed, and I think that's a nice developmental project behind Stafford.
When do they address wide receiver now that Calvin's gone?
I think anytime third round or after. You know, it just depends on what you're looking at. I do believe Marvin Jones and Golden Tate are sufficient, especially when you factor in, yeah, they're not wide receivers, but Theo Riddick and Eric Ebron are pass catchers. And those two could combine for upwards of 120, 140 balls. You know, sounds like a lot, but no, it's not. Theo Riddick had 80 catches last year and Ebron had 47. Ebron should have more this year. I don't know. I think, you know, maybe you've tapped out on Riddick's possibility or contributions to the offense, but still, 140 receptions, a lot to go with Tate, who has caught over 90 balls the last 2 years, and really Marvin Jones should have, you know, some kind of increase, too, on his production from last year, which was 68 receptions. They've got plenty of wide receiving options. They could upgrade in the slot. Jeremy Curley is a nice veteran player, I think, can step in and fill that, I guess, last little complimentary role well for a season. But it'd be nice to have a slot receiver you can develop, and I just don't know if they believe T.J. Jones currently on the roster is that guy.
All right, Justin Rogers, MLive.com. So after all of that, assuming no trades, just picking at number 16, what do you expect?
Offensive tackle. It's not a guarantee. You know, the top four could be off the board by the time the lines are on the clock, but I really think Conklin and Decker, even though they're not ideal athletes for that position, I think they're still probably the most logical pick and a huge upgrade from what the Lions have now.
All right. That sounds like a plan. Good stuff, Justin. Thanks so much. I appreciate the conversation. It's always insightful, and it's also a lot of fun, so we appreciate you joining us.
Anytime.
Thank you, man. All right, there you go. Lions look at it from Justin Rogers, who's inside. Not inside, but he is, of course, a beat writer covering the Detroit Lions, so he's got some insight. Maybe that's the better word. Not inside, but he's got some insight there. And he says offensive tackle at number 16, perhaps Conklin, perhaps Decker out of Ohio State. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. But coming up next, after the top of the hour Sports Center in the break, we are going to go to the other side and go east of us and talk to Scott Petrak, who's covering the Browns. And we'll see what he thinks they're going to do with that number 8 overall pick. Are they going to keep it and take perhaps Paxton Lynch, a quarterback, which, of course, everybody expects them to do at some point in this draft, sooner rather than later? Or do they look to fill one of the other myriad needs they have in Cleveland? So we'll talk to him coming up as well. And before we go to that Sports Center here at the top of the hour, let me give you this, a sweet deal today. The sweet deal of the week this week on 106.5theticket.com is a $50 gift certificate to Shwarmaholic on C-Corps. Log in at 106.5theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 to pick up a $50 gift certificate for just $25. That's right, it's half price. Or get one for $0 right now, free, at 866-240-1065. Caller 10. I'll give you a free $50 gift certificate coming up right now if you're caller 10 to 866-240-1065. Good luck. Back after this.
He's a very talented passer. He's got incredible pocket presence. His feet are always alive. He's made some very difficult throws under duress. Did not have a great supporting cast at Cal, but had tremendous production. But this is a gutsy trade by the Philadelphia Eagles, assuming Carson Wentz comes off at number 2. No one thought this. Nobody thought this 3-4 months ago. He comes from a very good system. He's had production. He has all the measurables. You fall in love with him when you meet him, but there is some unknown when it comes to Carson Wentz.
I've had two quarterbacks the whole time, and I stuck with it. I don't think there's going to be a third, and if there is, I don't know that it's an existing team sitting at the slot
right now. Move up. Yeah.
Move back into the first round to go get one. The biggest difference probably from last time is the offensive tackle Stanley from Notre Dame instead of Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss going 3.
You get an idea today. There's no more bluffing. There's no hiding. Today's the day we get a real idea where every team stands on all these issues. There were 3 trades of top 10 picks already. There are a small pocket of teams that are interested in coming up. I don't know if we are going to get a third quarterback picked in the first round.
You're always trying to prepare for the unexpected because you just know you don't know how it's going to fall. You know, people throw out all kinds of information. Some of it's true. Some of it's smokescreen. Sometimes, really, when you're sitting there, you have to really be able to just think fast on your feet because when the clock is ticking, it's amazing how tense some people can really get.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number 2 is underway on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope you're having an awesome afternoon. Hope you're getting excited for draft night tonight, as excited as you can be. You know, if you are picking in the top 10, you're probably thrilled. If you're picking in the middle of the first round, literally directly in the middle as the Lions are at 16, you're probably pretty excited. What can we get there? If you're picking at the bottom of the first round, you're probably thinking, yeah, well, it's going to be a good player, but it's not going to be a superstar. And you know what? You're probably wrong. I've been watching and reading more reports about blown first-round picks, early first-round picks, particularly when it comes to quarterbacks. First-round quarterbacks are, you talk about, not a coin flip. It's not even a chance, not even a coin flip chance, really. It's far less than that. according to all of the numbers. You got to be patient. You got to be patient. The best players in this draft might come at the end of the first round. They might come into the second round. The good news for the Cleveland Browns is they've got picks in all of those places. They got them in the top 10. They got them at the bottom of the first round, technically the first pick of the second round, but number 32 overall. And they got them early in the second round, and on down we go. They've got six of the top 100, so sooner or later, their long, long running streak of making horrific early draft picks has got to end, does it not? That's what we're here to find out. Thanks so much for joining us once again on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket will open up the phone lines to you and your draft questions and calls at 866-240-1065. But first, we do want to talk a little bit more about the Browns draft strategy tonight, their philosophy, what they hope to gain in terms of their first-round pick or turning it into more later-round picks. Joining us now to do that is Scott Petrak. I almost said Justin Rogers again. We just had Justin Rogers from MLive.com giving us the Lions lowdown. Scott Petrak, however, is a longtime Browns beat writer joining us once again right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Scott, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. I'm getting sick, though. I'm sick of this weather. It's 75 on Monday and now cold and 40s on and raining on Thursday, and it's just driving me batty, but... That's neither here nor there. All right, Scott. I just had a really interesting conversation with Justin Rogers of MLive.com covering the Lions. And we were looking at who's making the picks, obviously, for the Lions now. And it's, of course, their new GM, Bob Quinn. And Bob Quinn is an interesting guy because if you look at his background, you think, boy, is there anybody who's never been a GM before in a better position to handle a draft, to rock a draft, perhaps, than a guy like this, because, A, he comes to the Lions from the best organization probably in professional sports, and that's the Patriots. B, what he did when he was with the Patriots is, what he should do if he's going to be in this position. He came up through their scouting department, became the director of their pro scouting, gives them all kind of insight into player evaluation and ranking and acquisition, et cetera. I bring that up only to compare it to where the Browns, what the Browns have decided to do. Somebody who didn't come up through scouting, didn't come up through player personnel, didn't come up through really anything having to do with actual on-the-field football. He's more of a business guy, an attorney, and Sashi Brown has got all of the control of this draft and the final 53-man roster for the Cleveland Browns. So my long, long, long question to you, Scott, is... which position would you rather be in, you know, with a guy making your picks, a guy like Bob Quinn or a new guy with a new philosophy who hasn't done this before like Sashi Brown?
Well, I'm a little old-fashioned, Bob. I would take Quinn and the Lions. You know, that doesn't mean that Sashi Brown won't get it right for the Browns, and I'm fascinated to see how the new regime works. Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta from baseball. You know, the NFL guy, quote-unquote, in the room is Andrew Berry, the head of the personnel department, but he's only 29. He's never run a draft. So you just don't know what the Browns are going to do, and you don't know how it's going to come together. And I'm sure they're prepared. They're all smart guys. I'm sure they've run through every scenario. But I know from guys who've been in that position before, it changes when you're on the clock and when the guy you want to take gets picked right before you, your turn. There's pressure, and guys panic, and it'll be interesting to see how this new group handles it.
How much impact, or no, not impact, how much influence is the better word here, do you think the owner is going to have on this, given that this is his, you know, his experiment, his science project? You know, he's the one who got rid of the traditional type of model to bring in, you know, Sashi and analytics Paul from baseball and all the rest. Is he going to have, like, you know, a direct say here? Is he going to be talking to them before they make these decisions, or he's just going to stay out of the way?
Well, I'm sure he'll be in the room, but you would hope that he doesn't have a whole lot of say, Bob. To me, he's done less homework than every other guy in that room. You know, I don't think Jimmy's breaking down film. You know, maybe he watched the top quarterbacks. And to me, unless you're Jerry Jones, who has a football background, or Richardson in Carolina, you're better off letting your football guys handle things. Now, if there's a big decision, are we going to trade out of 2-8? Then you got to consult with the owner. You have to ask him, okay, are you okay with this quarterback that we're going to pick? A guy with red flags, a guy with big medical concerns. But otherwise, I think you let your football guys make the decision.
What if he's got D breaking down film for him?
Well, I don't know. I'm okay with that.
I'm only half joking, of course, because it just, you know, as the transition went from the last regime to the new one, it was very interesting. Everything was signed. All of the notes to the media were signed Jimmy ND, as if she is just kind of like a co-partner in all of this whole thing as far as running the Browns and trying to turn it back into a respectable franchise. But that's neither here nor there. Okay, so, you know, you've got confidence. Well, you're more fascinated, I guess, more than anything, that to watch this thing to play out, to see how they do it. And you're right. I'm sure they have all studied their tails off. We know they've worked their tails off, too, because you don't arrange a trade, a blockbuster, the size of the one they did with the Eagles without, you know, really, really being in the middle of all of this. So to that end, you made your mock draft picks today. I saw your last mock draft in the newspaper, and I saw it online, and you think they're at it again. They're out there. They're going to be proactive. They're going to be ringing the phones, or at least receptive to people ringing theirs, and you've got them moving down again. Tell us why.
Yeah, I just think there's a couple of reasons, Bob. I don't think they're in love with the player that's going to be at number 8. And maybe that's just me projecting myself. There's not a guy I love at number 8. So therefore, why not move back 5 spots or 7 spots and take a guy that you like and you'd be happy with? If you're happy with him at 8, you can still get him at 13 or 15, then go ahead and get an extra second-round pick or a second and third, whatever that haul would be that you get in return. That's part of it, and I think the analytics, you know, the Browns, they obviously embrace analytics. And they, every time you ask them about them, they try to kind of downplay the influence it's going to have. But in my mind, and I think they showed you their direction with the first trade from number 2 to number 8, is that analytics say you compile as many picks as possible. And I think that will be the overriding kind of force in the draft room is, hey, we can keep picking up picks without moving down a ton from 2 to 8, from 8 to 13. And if you move down, at the end of the day, you move down 11 spots and you picked up 5 extra picks, I think the numbers would always tell you to do that unless there was a quarterback at stake.
What exactly do you think they could get to move from? If, for example, in your mock, you've got them going to Miami at, 13?
13.
Yeah, so from 8 to 13, you go back 5 slots. Let's reverse that. Miami gets to go up 5 slots. What do they give you for that?
You know what? I played conservatively, and in my mock, I just said they get a second-round pick this year, which I think is number 42, in addition to the number 13 pick. I've been talking to guys today who think the Browns could get a lot more. I don't think it's a lot more. Maybe you get a second and a third. Maybe you get a second this year and a second next year. To me, if there's not a player you love, like if you have to be talked into the trade, right? The Dolphins have to blow you away and we're just, hey, we're fine staying at 8 and taking our guy. Then you hold out for whatever you can get. But let's say the Browns want Laquon Treadwell, who in my mind is a top receiver in the draft. I'm confident he'll be there at 13. So if you're going to take him at 8 anyway, to me, anything you get in addition by moving down 5 picks is worth a trade. So I think it's anywhere from a second-round pick to multiple second-rounders.
Just since you brought it up on your mock, we're talking to Scott Petrak, by the way. We're talking about the Browns side of the draft now. We did Justin Rogers and the Lions last half hour. If you missed it, you can always hear it on our podcast, by the way. We are now podcasting all of these shows at 1065theticket.com. So if you missed Justin Rogers' preview of the draft from the Lions' perspective, that's there for you. Scott, since you wrote it in your mock that the Dolphins would be moving up to take Ezekiel Elliott from Ohio State, I just have to ask it. Are you in love with Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell? If Zeke Elliott is sitting there at number 8, would you consider that if you're Sashi Brown?
I think you have to consider taking Zeke at number 8. However, I think it's almost a catch-22. I think if Zeke is there for you at 8, then you can get better offers to trade down than if you weren't there, because I think Miami wants to move up and take him, as well as maybe other teams. And to me, I like Duke. You know, I don't love Duke. He's not an everyday down back. I think Duke and Crowell together is fine. I don't think that's the biggest problem. But my biggest holdup with Ezekiel Elliott at number 8 is I just don't think a running back is worth a top-10 pick in today's NFL. And he would have to be a special running back. And I know the argument is, well, Zeke special? Well, if he turns out to be that kind of special, then he's worth the number 8 pick. But we thought Trent Richardson was that kind of special, and he stunk. So I just think the analytics and the numbers say, you know what, running back isn't as important as it used to be. Don't spend a top 10 pick on it.
Yeah, and I know that's kind of the trend in the NFL, that running backs aren't that important, and you can find them later on in other places. And certainly we've seen teams prove that. I just wonder, is Zeke special enough, to use your word, to do that? And obviously there are some who think he's going to go as high as number four. Forget about top right. 10, top five, right. that Dallas might actually consider him, pulling the trigger on him there. Do you think that's possible?
I do. I think Dallas winds up going defense, whether it's Jalen Ramsey or Joey Bosa. But I know that they love Elliott there, and that's why it's tricky, because I do think, if you look at it, he would have the biggest impact maybe of anybody the Browns could draft. And there's something to be said for that. And a team that needs playmakers and touchdown scorers, he gives you the best chance. He's my favorite offensive player outside of quarterback. But I hate to get caught up in, oh my gosh, this guy's the answer. Now, if there's somebody in that room that believes he is the second coming of Adrian Peterson, then that's fine, but he's just an above-average running back. I just don't think he's worth a top 10 pick.
Well, and you know what I would ask you, even if he is, just to kind of further the point about NFL devaluing running backs, what if he is the next Adrian Peterson? I would ask you, what has Adrian Peterson won? You know, I mean, you can be the best running back in football and not get anywhere if you don't have the passing game. And I know Teddy Bridgewater is still a very young guy going into his third year, et cetera, but the point being, you know, you can be the best running back and still not be able to take your team in today's NFL to the playoffs and beyond to be a Super Bowl contender, because AP is prime example of a guy who hasn't done it.
Well, no, that's 100% correct. Now, the caveat to that is you can say that about every position but quarterback, right? Joe
True.
Thomas
yes.
is the best back in football. He hasn't done anything. You know, Des Bryant's a big-time receiver. He hasn't done anything. So you can make that argument, but I agree with you. And I kind of have hard and fast rules. There's only so many positions in my mind that are worth the top 10 pick, and running back's not one of them. You know, I think receiver is. I think left tackle is. Obviously quarterback. Cornerback and pass rusher. I don't think it's a big range of positions that are worth such a high pick.
So if there was a middle linebacker, and I'm not saying there is one in this draft, if there's a Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher kind of a cat out there, you don't think that the inside linebacker spot is worth the top 10 pick?
I don't, Bob, and especially for the Browns, they run the 3-4, and I don't think there's any inside linebacker in a 3-4 worth maybe a top 20 pick. But we talked this about with Ozzie Newsome about this at the Combine, and he said Ray Lewis would not be a top 15 pick right now because of the position he plays. And it sounds silly, but you don't know that the guy's going to turn into Ray Lewis, and a lot of guys are forecast to be stars and turn out to be average, and then you look back and say, hey, we shouldn't have spent the number 13 pick on a right guard or a middle linebacker or a tight end.
That's a great point. Jim, go ahead.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, too, because we have entered this realm in the NFL where people don't like taking running backs, not just top 10, but first round overall. So it does make me ask a question. What are the it seems like Ezekiel Elliott is obviously in a different category as far as a few GMs are concerned, that they may take him early on in that first round. What does that say about his possible impact in terms of a running back in this day and age where running back position is different in terms of how it's handled in the draft?
No, that's a good question. Well, he's a three-down guy, and he's kind of like a triple threat. He not only does he run the ball really effectively, I think he had 1,800 yards the last couple of years with Ohio State, catches the ball out of the backfield, can pick up the blitz, isn't afraid to block, so he doesn't have to leave the field. And so many running backs today have a hole in their game, and he doesn't appear to. You know, he's not injured. He hasn't been banged up. He seems to be clean off the field. He just looks like a guy that can step in right away and play for you, and I think that's what's attractive. And I also think when the average person scouts, right, and they just watch some film, he's a guy that you see running for a touchdown, you go, well, I could see him do that on a Sunday. And maybe you don't have the same kind of view of a defensive end or a guard because they just don't stand out as much as a running back. So I think we kind of get caught up in the moment of, this guy's a playmaker, NFL teams need playmakers, which is true, but then you forget about, well, his shelf life might only be 5 years. Is that worth it? And what if he gets dinged up? And if in the third round there's a guy that's 80% as good as him, but you can also draft somebody else in the first round. There's just too many facets to go into it for me.
Scott Petrek is our guest. We're evaluating the Browns NFL draft options as we did the Alliance in the last half hour. Scott, of course, a beat writer covering the Cleveland Browns. Scott, who's the best player in the draft?
Well, I like Jared Goff a lot of that's position specific. He's my favorite quarterback. I think he's going to be really good in this league. If you take quarterbacks out of
the
equation.
Hold on, before you do that, let's expand that. Why are you so high on Goff? I was talking about this in the first half hour. I don't know. I feel like Goff and Wentz, who are being touted as being franchise quarterbacks, are only being touted as such because they're the best two in this draft. But if they were in last year's draft, neither one of them is going anywhere near Winston or Mariota. They might be mid-round picks, mid-first-round picks. I feel like this is just the best of this draft, and sometimes we tend to overinflate it because it's the best of this draft. But you seem to like him a lot.
Yeah, I get your point, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I think if I would rank him with Winston and Mariota, I think I'd have him step in step with Mariota. I think Winston's different physically. He's just bigger and stronger, bigger arm. But I think Goff compares favorably to Mariota, not as much as an athlete. You know, Mariota had the running that Goff doesn't. But there's just something really natural about him, Bob. He moves so well inside the pocket in the confined space. He's a natural thrower of the ball. I talked to the Cal coach last week and wound up not writing it because the Browns traded out of the number two spot and weren't going to take Goff. But raised about him, he's a clean guy on and off the field. He says just when he got there, he was just ready to be a quarterback. And there's just something about watching him. To me, it says that's going to translate. I like his confidence. I like his personality. I like the fact that he took a losing program and turned it around. But just on the field, it comes down to natural. His accuracy down the field, I think, is unparalleled with anybody else in this draft. The fact that he stands in the pocket, even though he's a little, quote-unquote, skinny, he's not afraid to take a hit. There's just something about watching him. I loved watching him. I probably watched 7 games of his, and I said, this is a guy I would pin my hopes on.
All right, and that's fair enough. But you said that was position specific. Is he the best player in the draft, positions notwithstanding? And if not,
yeah,
who is?
You know, I think Jalen Ramsey, and maybe even Ezekiel Elliott are in that discussion. Then I really do. I think there's a drop off before you get to a Bosa. I'm not sold on any of those offensive linemen as being the best player in the draft. I think the discussion is Goff and Wentz if you love him. But for me, Goff, Ramsey, and then Elliott, but he just plays the wrong position.
The Browns have obviously a massive need, as we've outlined many times when I've had you on the air, at all the different positions because of losses in free agency and because of decisions to cut guys, et cetera, et cetera. Which is the most glaring position need? Is it in the secondary? Is it at the wide receiver position? Is it along that offensive line? Is it in that linebacking core? Although I think you already answered that a little bit. You said you don't think anybody in the top any linebacker should be in the top 10 unless it's a pass rusher. So which of those glaring needs is the most important for the Browns to attack, not just with the number 8 pick, but they have 6 of the top 100 picks, but to focus most on with those early picks?
Yeah, I'd go receiver, secondary, pass rusher. In receiver, I think they need to take multiple guys early. Yeah, I think it's that big a need.
What about offensive line? You didn't mention that, and they lost Schwartz and Mack. And I know Cameron Irving's a former number one pick who's supposed to step in there now, maybe for Mack. And based on everything we saw last year, I don't see it happening. I mean, he was a turnstile, for crying out loud, or he was a doormat that guys wiped their feet on as they walked back to the quarterback. If you're Robert Griffin, man, you got to be begging, please. Somebody is going to block here, right?
No, I hear what you're saying. My only counter is you can at least picture what they're going to do up front. Joe Thomas, Joe Batonio, Cam Irving, who I know everything you said is 100% true, but was the number one pick just a year ago.
Yeah.
John Greco, and then somebody at right tackle. And you can play with that line, right? If Irving shows improvement, then you got 4 positions that are okay, and then you got to figure out what to do at right tackle. And they think they have a couple candidates. They can draft the guy in the 3rd round and try to plug him in. So I think there's options there. I don't know what they do right now if they have to line up at wide receiver, and I don't know who plays cornerback. So for me, those are bigger needs, not to say that the offensive line doesn't have to be addressed. But when we talk about the Browns, the new regime is in so many difficult spots. But to me, one of them is they've put in a lot of assets into their offensive line lately, right? A 2nd-round pick in Batonio 2 years ago, a 1st-round pick in Cam Irving last year. You know, they're paying Joe Thomas a ton of money. They paid Greco an extension. At some point, you got to say, you know what? The guys that we have that we invested in have to perform before we just give up on them. And I kind of feel that's where they are with the offensive line.
You know, looking at all these various positions, too, Scott, because as we've talked about and as you guys were just mentioning, you're talking receivers or linebackers in certain areas and now even maybe an offensive line. With the Browns having so many needs and so many picks at the same time, you hear a lot of this bandied about, especially this week. Do you draft for need or do you draft best on best available on your board when your turn comes up? Given the needs and the number of picks, should they be more focused on at certain times? Because let's say you get that 32nd pick, that number one pick in round two tomorrow night, and you want to go get a receiver, but maybe the best guy, quote unquote, on the board is not a receiver. If you're the Browns, how do you approach that? Do you still go for need, or do you go for a best overall because they need everything?
Right. Well, I think you tend to go to best overall, like you said, because the best overall is probably going to fill a need, right? As long as they maybe don't draft a tight end because Gary Barton just coming off Pro Bowl season. You know, in D-line, you could say, do they have enough guys at D-line? But overall, they need help everywhere. So it makes it a little easier. But what also needs to be said is when they set their draft board, they factor in need into how they set their draft board. So if let's say they don't need a running back, but there's a running back head and shoulders above everybody else, then that's where it's a debate. But how they stock their draft board, receivers would just naturally get bumped up the board because they know they need help.
Scott Petrak is our guest. He is, of course, a beat writer covering the Cleveland Browns, and we're talking about the draft tonight. Scott, really, really good stuff on all fronts, but we haven't mentioned the word quarterback other than talking about Jared Goff. Are the Browns, of course they're going to take a quarterback. How soon? A lot of people thought, I thought, that in your scenario in which you had them trading down, and I'm looking at your mock from this morning, in which you have them trading down from 8 to 13 with the Dolphins. The Dolphins go up and get Elliott. I thought they would, at 13, maybe grab Paxton Lynch there. So if not there, where and when do they find their quarterback? Are they going to look at maybe 32 and hope that Connor Cook is still around, or are they going to wait until the mid-rounds?
Well, that's maybe the biggest question I want to get answered tonight, Bob, or in the next 2 days. I don't know 100% how they feel, and I think part of that is because RG3 – I don't have a great sense of their commitment to RG3 as the answer. I know they believe in him somewhat, or else they wouldn't have signed him. I know they believe in somewhat, or else they wouldn't have traded out of number two and given up the chance to get Carson Wentz. Having said that, I think Lynch is in play, but I've heard conflicting stuff whether or not they like him enough to draft him. I think Connor Cook is in play if they stay at 32. I find it difficult to believe that they'll get a bunch of picks and then trade some of those away to move back into the first round. So a quarterback would have to fall to him. But I think 32 is in chance if Connor Cook or Lynch are still available. And then if not, then I think you're looking at more of third round, fourth round, a guy like Dak Prescott, Bissett from North Carolina State, a guy in that ilk, Kevin Hogan from Stanford, who maybe not expecting to ever be a starter, but you hope you kind of discover the diamond in the rough and he turns out to be your guy.
That's about five or six names I think we've mentioned without saying Hackenberg. Not a believer in Christian Hackenberg's ability to kind of bounce back from a rough end to his Penn State career?
I am not, Bob. I know he fits the bill, and I know he looks like a quarterback and throws like a quarterback. I just saw too much inconsistency. And that doesn't mean if he's hanging around in the middle of the third round, he's not worth a flyer. I think he is. But when you hear a guy like John Gruden say he should go in the first round, if I were the Browns, I would not consider him in the first round. I like Lynch and Cook way better than I like Hector.
How many Buckeyes are going to go in the first round?
You know what? I didn't count them up in my mock, but I think there's five in there, and it could easily be six. You know, Zeke will go, Bosa will go, Apple, Lee, Michael Thomas is a good bet to go, Taylor Decker is going to go. There's going to be at least five. There could be six. Thomas, the question mark.
Does anybody know, Jim, do you know what the record is for most first-round picks in one draft from one school?
Not off the top of my head. I want to say a Miami Hurricanes team from years ago is up there, but I'd have to look at that.
Cause... Yeah, I'd be very interested to know that. And obviously, Zeke and Bosa are probably going to be the top two guys who go. And I kind of asked that because of the Taylor Decker question. You mentioned in your later part of your mock today, Scott, that I read, that Seattle – would be looking at Taylor Decker. However, they might offer that pick to the Browns for Joe Thomas. A, what do you think the likelihood of that offer coming is? instead of taking Taylor Decker to play to get the all-time or the multi-time All-Pro. And if that call did come, what do you think the likelihood is the Browns would actually say okay?
Yeah, I think the Browns are more likely to hang on to Joe until the trading deadline. I think they could get a number one pick next year and let Joe play 8 or 9 games for you and then trade him depending on who needs a left tackle for their playoff push. Mm-hmm. And Seattle's a weird team when it comes to the offensive line because they don't commit a lot of resources there. They don't draft guys high there. They like to convert defensive linemen. They think they can kind of find these guys. So when I had him taking an offensive lineman, I was kind of going back and forth. It just seems like such a natural spot for him. And I'd make a call if I were them to the Browns. I just think the Browns are going to be hesitant to trade Joe right now when there's so many other question marks. Hang on to him and get rid of him in November.
Wow. It's just an amazing thing to think about Joe Thomas being in another uniform. You just can't, you know. And although you almost wish he could for his own sake because he's dedicated himself to his craft, to his position, to being excellent year after year after year after year, hoping that maybe someday he'd be able to experience, playoff football and a chance to compete for a Super Bowl rather than just one little, drink of water when you get there and just not happening and anytime soon. And this rebuild that they're undertaking starting with tonight's draft doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. So, kind of wish good things for him. Last thing, Scotty, and we'll let you run. And we appreciate all your breakdown here, and I really enjoyed reading your mock today. Your mock, as we pointed out, has the Browns trading down from 8 to 13 and allowing the Dolphins to go up and get Ezekiel Elliott at 8. And then you got the Browns taking the best receiver in the draft, Laquon Treadwell from Mississippi. If they don't get that phone call from Miami, do you think they're ringing somebody else's phones because they really want to trade down? Or do you think they're just going to be open to the calls, and if somebody blows them away, they'll trade down?
I think they want to move down. I think that's their dream scenario.
So they'll pursue. They'll look down.
I do. Right. Now, I don't think they want to give the pick away. Right, they don't want to seem like a team that only wants to trade back. So it's going to take something worthwhile for them to move back. I think they're going to get offers. That's why I predicted the trade down. But Sashi Brown says he's comfortable staying there and picking a guy. I'm just not sure who that guy is, Bob. I don't know. Maybe he would just take Treadwell at 8.
Well, that was my next
maybe
question.
He loves Zeke,
that's what I was going to say. If the offer doesn't come that blows them away, either with their pursuit or them, answering the phone and somebody saying, "Hey, we really want Zeke here," or whatever, or they won't say that, but we really want to trade with you here. If they're forced to just take a player, that was going to be my next question. Which player do you call? Which one are you gonna go out there and forecast?
Yeah, I would say if DeForest Buckner's there, he'd be number one. I'd say Vernon Hargraves, the cornerback from Florida, would be number two, and then they would take whatever receiver they like best, probably Treadwell. That's why I like him moving back because I don't love any of those other guys at 8. I think they're good players, but I'd prefer moving back, pick up an extra pick, and then get the receiver you really need anyway.
What do you think the chance is that Bosa slides all the way down there at 8, and if so, would you take him?
I don't think the chances are very good, Bob. I think I have Dallas take him at 4, which they might not. They could take Zeke. They could take Jalen Ramsey if he's still there.
Yeah.
I think Baltimore considers Bosa at 6. And San Francisco 7. I think there's just too many spots for Bosa. But if he's there, I consider him. I personally have questions with him. The scheme fit I don't think is perfect. I know he can still rush the quarterback on third down, but it's not the perfect fit. And, he was suspended for a game, and there's whispers about his character, and the Browns have been through that before. I'd be looking for a purely clean prospect. To me, he's not that guy.
I don't disagree with the word of that, but I didn't think anybody else was really going to say it. Even the character part, and you don't want to impugn somebody's character that way, but I've heard the same thing, that there are whispers about that and about what his real productivity level on the NFL level would be. And if you're going to be a top 5 defensive tackle or end in this league, if you're going to be an end, and you got to be J.J. Watt. You got to be a 15-sack-a-year guy. And I know some people have said he could be J.J. Watt, but he could also be, the 8 to 10 sack a year guy, and that's not enough of production. It's very hard to tell, obviously, but that's not enough if you're going to take somebody in the top 5.
I agree completely. I don't see him as J.J. Watt. And, I'm with you, Bob. To me, there's too many questions mark with him, and he could make me eat my words because he's a good, he's a really good player, and he was a force at Ohio State. I just have questions with him, and I wouldn't spend my number 8 pick on the draft on him.
Well, a month and a half ago, wasn't he on a lot of mocks as the best player? Not a mock, not mocks, but just boards on the big boards. Wasn't he rated as the number one player on the board?
Yeah, he was in that discussion. He really was with Tunsil and those guys. And, you know, he didn't run the fastest time at the combine. I'm not sure he's as athletic as some people in the NFL. When you compare him to Von Miller, he's not Von Miller.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I mean when I say, you know, he's not the prototypical type of defensive end that's going to get you a ton of sacks. He's not Justin Houston. He's not Von Miller. He's not J.J. Watt. And maybe, like you said, we'll both be looking back and eating crow and saying, man, how wrong were we? Look at this monster. But I just look at him, and I see a guy who's gone from being potentially the top player on the board back at the combine time to a guy now that, and I was talking to Justin a few minutes ago, like I said, before you came on, and he said he hears rumors that he's going to continue to slide down toward the bottom of the top 10. Not that he's going to leave the top 10, but it could be there for the Browns, for example, at 8 o'clock, or at 8 o'clock, the 8th pick overall. And I kind of thought to myself, I don't know what they would do with that. I don't know if I'd want them to pull that trigger.
I'm with you. I would not personally. Now, if they do, then, okay, you get on board. And, you know, they could sell it, and the guy could have a great career. But if it were my decision, there's a bunch of guys, not a bunch, there's a handful of guys I would take before Joey Bosa, and I would trade down before I pick.
I think that's fair to say. I would do the same thing. All right, Scott, really good stuff. I know you got a busy night tonight covering all of this and writing about it for tomorrow. I really appreciate you putting in the time. Great stuff. I enjoyed the work today, and I certainly enjoy the conversation always.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Scotty. Scott Petrak joining us. He is, of course, a Browns beat writer looking at things from that perspective. All right, so we gave you Lions with Justin Rogers, beat writer for MLive.com. We gave you Browns with Scott Petrak. The only thing left is for you to make your call. Lions fan, no matter what you are, if you're a Lions fan, I want you to make that call right now. Tell me who you would like to see the Lions take at 16 if you're a Browns fan. Do you agree with Scott that they're going to trade that pick out and move down a little bit more? Or do you expect them to take a player? And if so, who would you like to see them take? That's the question. So we want to get your thoughts on that at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We'll put you up and on the radio with your thoughts on that. And then right now, you know what that sound means. We've been doing this all week long, and we're going to do it again right now. I'm going to give you an opportunity to go and see the outstanding performer. Great stage show, from what I understand, too. I've never been to see John Mellencamp in person. But I hear it's just a tremendous concert. He really pours it all into it. John Mellencamp is going to be at Stranahan on October 21st. Tickets go on sale tomorrow. And if you want to beat the box office now, I'll give you a pair of tickets. Caller 10, 866-240-1065. Caller 10, John Mellencamp tickets are yours from ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
That's now at 1065theticket.com. Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
I love what the big voice announcer dude says there. Yes, absolutely. If you missed part of the show, if you missed the evaluation of the Lions, or not the evaluation, but the analysis of the Lions as they head into the draft tonight with the 16th overall pick, Justin Rogers talked to us about that at 3:30. Then, of course, we had Scott Petrak. But basically, any interview, any segment, any show that you missed that you just want to hear some interesting conversation on, always download. We always have them now uploaded, I should say, to the podcast page of 1065theticket.com.
So and I can assure you that today's episode will be up there by the time I start drive time at about 5:05.
Wow, that's impressive. He turns it around quickly, does Mr.
Darn
Chrisland.
Right.
We'll get it uploaded for you right there on the page, 1065theticket.com. By the way, don't forget, I just got to throw this stuff at you, too, because, again, we're really trying to make a conscious effort this calendar year. This show is growing at just an extraordinary rate. Okay, I'm just going to tell you point blank. The show is growing. Listenership is just incredible. We have so many more people finding their way over to this show every afternoon. And because of that, on the air, we're really trying to grow it and integrate it with our social media and our other online presences. So follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. It's the only place I will tweet sports takes from is Sports Radio 106.5, not from my personal Twitter account, in which I just cover pretty much politics and news. But Sports Radio 106.5 is where we'll tweet from. Follow us there, and then also on Facebook, like the page, 106.5 The Ticket, so that we can engage there as well. And while we're at it, one more piece of online info. Download our free mobile app. All right? Download the app, Sports Radio 106.5, from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, or wherever it is that you have for your tablet, your phone. That way, when you're out of the coverage area, or if you are just away from our radio altogether, all you got to do is tap it, open it, and tap it, tap the play button, and you've got the Extravaganza, or you've got Drive Time, or you've got any of the outstanding ESPN radio program, programming throughout the day. They're at your fingertips. All right? So just wanted to throw all of that at you. Congratulations. I got a couple of winners to announce. Congratulations to Jason Stambaugh. Jason from Toledo won our Sweet Deal of the Week last segment. Don't forget, Sweet Deal of the Week comes your way coming up tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on 1065theticket.com. The only thing you have to remember is that they are only there while supplies last. $50 gift certificates for just $25 to Shawarmaholic on C-Corps. And that's tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at 1065theticket.com. And then the other winner is Bill Norris of Toledo. He won the John Mellencamp tickets as he comes to Stranahan on October 21st. All right, Jim Cushlin. We got Justin Rogers' pick from MLive.
Right.
We got Scott Petrak's pick for the Browns from Cleveland here just a couple of minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And get yours. What do you think is going to happen? Let's start with the Browns, since you're a Cleveland fan, as am I. Let's see. Are they moving back? Do you agree with Petrak, or are they picking somebody at 8?
I think they're going to move back again, especially if any possible door, you know, is open. Scott kind of indicated, and that was actually the clincher for me. I was waiting to hear from someone more on the inside than you or I what they're thinking, and it sounds like they're going to keep those lines open and do what they can is what it sounds like to make a move. So I expect them to end up moving back yet again.
And how far back, and what do you think they're going to do? What are they going to target?
Well, if they're going to move back with this Dolphins rumor, then that puts them about, 13. Thank you. That puts them about 13. What's funny is Miami would be moving back into their original spot at number 8, but then they made that move with the Eagles. And so that's just funny on a different level. And at that point, I can see them, and that would be at 13. I could see them either going receiver, depending on who's available, or maybe somebody in terms of a linebacker. I kind of agree with Scott. Unless you're a big-time sack guy and pass rusher, you wait till you're out of the top 10. So I could see them going either linebacker or receiver, depending on who's available at 13 when they move back.
Every receiver would be available then. According to most mocks, there's not going to be a top 10 receiver. And in Scott's own mock, Laquan Treadwell, regarded by many to be the best receiver in the draft, would be their guy at 13.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm thinking. But the moral of the story is I'm in agreement with what Scott was saying, and that is that they're going to keep all the doors open to move back. So I expect them to move back yet again.
There were only a couple of linebackers, though, to be honest with you, that are even rated in the first round. In fact, three.
That's why I said receiver first.
Yeah, Miles Jack, the linebacker from UCLA, is projected to go very, very quickly within the top 6 or 7 picks.
GMs get scared of the whole knee thing. Right. I'm on one mock right now that has him at 13 to the Dolphins pre-trade.
Okay. Another one in that same neighborhood would be Leonard Floyd from Georgia. He is one of the others. And then the only other, consistently, if you look at most of the mocks and most of the big boards, the only consistent other two other consistent names that are even mentioned in the first round as far as linebackers go.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Darren Lee from Ohio State, and then and Reggie Ragland from Alabama. Those are the linebackers that you can.
I'd agree with that sentiment in terms of what linebackers are.
But I kind of agree with Scott, though. The reason I read those to you because, Scott kind of convinced me when it comes to first round picks overall, and certainly to like top 20 picks.
Yeah.
There are certain positions that are worth taking at that point, and there are some that are not. And run stuffing middle linebackers, he basically was saying not. And I tend to lend some weight to when Ozzie Newsome speaks. Ozzie Newsome has proven to be, since he took over, you know, the Baltimore Ravens when the Ravens took the Cleveland Browns, is an astute general manager, extraordinarily well accomplished, and one of the best evaluators in the game. And when he says that Ray Lewis today, Ray Lewis wouldn't even be a top 15 pick because the position, like running back, is just a bit devalued.
Yeah.
If you're going to take a linebacker in today's NFL, very high in the draft, he better be an outside linebacker, pass rusher.
Exactly.
Because it's just not, you know, these middle guys. You know, and the Browns are kind of, you know, they need both, I suppose, but they failed so many times with the outside linebackers and getting the, you know, the Mingo pick was one of them. I don't know if I go there. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit gun-shy because of past mistakes. Whedon, McCoy, Manziel, Quinn. I'm really, really gun-shy, but I got to tell you, if I'm picking, if I'm Sashi Brown, I'm still desperate to find something better than Robert Griffin or Josh McCown. And I got to tell you what I'm doing is I'm trading back a little further than you are there in what Scott did. And I'm taking Paxton Lynch. I'm trading back with somebody who's willing, you know, because the Jets are quarterback hungry too.
Yep.
He's got the Jets grabbing Connor Cook. So that's at 20. So I'm trading back into the late teens there. So I have my choice of either Lynch or Connor Cook to be, you know, the future quote unquote franchise guy. And I know I should be gun shy, but what's the old adage? Once bitten, twice shy, because of all of the blown draft picks they've made on quarterbacks. But it's got to happen sooner or later. All right, that's it. That's all the time we've got. You know what? Kill that music for a minute. I got music on the way out because, here we go. I got music on the way out because I enjoyed giving away those John Mellencamp camp tickets so much that I want to do it again. I got another pair.
Last
pair
one.
Of the week. What's that, Jimmy?
Yes, indeed. Last one.
Last pair of the week. That's exactly right. John Mellencamp at Stranahan Theater on October 21st. Beat the box office. Right now, by being caller number 10, 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Best of luck to you. Jim Cushlin coming your way next, filling in for Mike Miller on Drive Time. Have a good night.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.